Back here with Back on the Field, I'm Dan Satora alongside my partner here, Robert Drummond, played in the NFL, also played in the CFL, and of course a Syracuse alum. Rob, how are you doing today?
Pretty good. How's it going, Dan?
We're doing well. Now, I want to start with you about the Syracuse game that they had going on recently here. I mean, obviously they come off of a good road win against South Florida, 35-34, and then they get put in a situation where they're back on the road against Cincinnati. Knew it was going to be a tough test because, number one, Cincinnati went strong and went into overtime against Louisville, who's a ranked team, and Louisville also being undefeated. And then at the same time, you look at what Syracuse has had to do on the road. They haven't won since November 2010. They go and they beat South Florida. It's been almost 2 years since they won a road game in the Big East. So all that time in between in Coach Marone's tenure, playing up against a team in Cincinnati that is obviously a strong team, going up against the likes of Louisville, and then at the same time it's in Ohio. So Syracuse had a lot against them before the game even started.
I mean, it was a tough, tough game to watch. You know, as you said, Syracuse did have every intangible against them going into this game. But you know, champions and good teams find a way to fight through adversity. And right now it just seems like Syracuse is playing in spurts, you know, and up until this point, you know, they're Jekyll and Hyde trying to figure them out. You know, you can sit here and blame some of the bad calls that the referees had, because, I mean, I was sitting here watching the game with a group of friends, and there were some bad calls. But you know what? You can't blame games on referees. You know, and that's why the games are played. Just go out there, overcome what happens, just try and go out there and do the best you can in the game. But right now, they're just struggling. And this week, they have Louisville coming to the Dome, you know, and it's Syracuse homecoming. They can make a huge statement going out in this game and getting a victory, but you know what? It's not going to come easy. Louisville's not going to lay down and give them the game. But right now, I think they're struggling. And right now, I think this game is a perfect game for Syracuse because they can go out there and really make a statement.
What does it tell you, going back to that Cincinnati game, about this team and the fact that, you know, we've talked about the running game and how Syracuse has gone more toward the running game the last few games. They've won those games. They've given the ball more to Jerome Smith. They've spread the ball out. They've started a drive with it. They've gone the middle of the drive with it. They've run 5-6 running plays in a row. In this game, in the second half, down 17-14, little bit of run, couple carries, go to Jerome Smith. He gets an early touchdown. After that, in the fourth quarter, that entire quarter alone, they run the ball just a couple times, give it to Prince Tyson Gully and let him just take it. But that's it. They give him a couple chances, and that's all. So from having a first half and then a little bit in the third quarter to having three carries going to a running back, do you think that that ultimately affected the game?
I definitely think it ultimately affected the game. As I said before, running the ball establishes an identity, especially for an offense. You know, you can control the tempo. You know, you can control the speed of the game. You know, you can flex your power on their power because it's a smash mouth football. And when you get away from the run, I feel you lose less confidence because now you're throwing the ball down the field, and a lot of bad things can happen when you're throwing the ball. But Syracuse right now needs to establish themselves an identity, and it seems like for the first, second, and third quarters they always do. But you know, come fourth quarter, anything else, they just stop running and they get away from what they've been successful doing the entire game. And it's frustrating to watch sometimes.
Playing against a running quarterback, we've talked about it before. They couldn't figure out how to stop Kane Coulter. They couldn't figure out how to stop B.J. Daniels, but had that last touchdown with 3 seconds to go. Can't figure out how to go up against Cincinnati and stop not only Munchie Legault, but also Jordan Llewellyn, who also ran the ball for them, and Brendan Kay at times, who took to the ground. So three different quarterbacks playing as running backs. Out of those three games, they've won one of them. Mm-hmm. Now you have Louisville's Teddy Bridgewater coming in. How does a team establish itself against a running quarterback? I mean, you know what it's like to run. You know what it's like to be on the opposite side of the defense. What could you tell the Syracuse defense to prepare for a guy who's taking that snap every time that can take off for the run that they can't stop so far?
The first opportunity you get a chance to hit him as a defense player, hit him and hit him hard. Let him understand it's going to be a long game. You know, because if you let him get comfortable, especially as a running quarterback, it's going to be a very, very, very long day for that defense. You know, so you go out there and play within the scheme and the scope of what you practice all week. When you get a chance to hit him, you have to hit him hard and let him understand that you're here ready to play. And I don't think they're doing that right now. They haven't done it. They've done it once the past 3-4 games.
When you look at a team like Syracuse, and you, like you said, playing in spurts, you also see the fact that this is a team that if one part of the defense does well, another part lags. If one part of the offense is doing well, then that lags. Or maybe the offense has an off day, the defense has a good day. What is it about that? I mean, is there any atmosphere you could change in the locker room, being a player that's played professionally and played for Syracuse, to get everybody on the same page? Because, you know, we talk about guys like Rashard Anderson, pass interference penalties, makes a lot of mistakes, but then here's a guy who played very well when he went up against Cincinnati, and in every other game he's not playing well. What can you say to a team that has a little bit here, a little bit there, to bring it all together?
You know what? Not being in their locker room, I can only speak from my experience myself. You know, and it's one thing throughout my career that I've understood as far as like games and things aren't going right and things aren't going well on the field is that you can't get down on yourself. You know, and it takes your teammates to put you on a pedestal and put you up there and make you feel that much better. You know, it seems like these guys are getting down on themselves and no one's pulling them up and telling them it's okay. You know, you're human. You made a mistake. You just go out there and make up for it. Whenever I would make a mistake in a game, my teammates always told me, you know, don't worry about a drum, you know, just go out there and make it up the next play. And I always said to myself, you know what, I'm going to do something. At some point, at some time during this game, I'm going to do a play to make up, you know, because my teammates have the trust in me and I'm not going to let them down. It just seemed like these guys aren't rallying around someone when they make a mistake, and they're making mistakes in spurts, whether it be on offense, defense, special teams, coaching, no matter. You have to come together as a team to be a cohesive group in order to win games. Right now, they're just not that cohesive group.
Talking about having problems, you know, when you said, you know, not coming together, you know, offensively, defensively, special teams, but also coaching, how much of Syracuse's blunders on offense do you attribute to play calling?
You know, that's hard to say, you know, because I'm not at their practice, you know, day in and day out as they go through some of the play calling they do in practice, you know, but from outside observers just watching, you know, the coaches implement plays during the week for them to practice, and the players actually have to go out there and execute them, and if they're not executing them, that's the player's fault, it's not the coach's. So, you know, you can sit here and point fingers all the time. You know, my one motto of mine was never to point the finger at the coach or someone else, to point the finger at myself, because the emphasis on getting the play correct was, you know, was my job. You know, so I, as an outside observer, that's a hard, very tough question to answer, because, you know, part of it's the coaches for making the call, part of it's the players, you know, for not executing the call. So it could be either.
4th and 3, 42-yard field goal attempt, down by 2 touchdowns. It's the fourth quarter. It's rain slash snow going on, and your kicker, Ross Krautmann, is less than 50% from 40-plus yards away. Right call, the wrong call.
I never second-guess a coach, but if I were coaching the game at that time, you have nothing to lose. You go for it. You know, either make it or break it, but what's a field goal going to give you is all I could say. So me personally, I would go for it. I don't know what was in Doug's head or what he was thinking at that time, you know, but as I said, I never second-guess a coach, but all I can say is what I would have done. I would have went for a touchdown, I mean, at least get a first down, a touchdown, whatever, but I wouldn't have put it in the hands of a less than 50% kicker, you know, in those conditions, that situation at that time.
If you could talk to the team right now, not just offense, but defense, too, and special teams, what would you say to them at 4-5, at 3-2 in the conference? You know, they start the conference out strong, and now they're losing their momentum here. They're going up against a team that's ranked in the top 25 in the country in Louisville. What can you say to this team? What would you say to this team if you had the chance?
First thing, you know, I tell the players, you know, to keep your head up high, you know, because no one understands what it is, the effort and the heart and the soul and the work that you're putting in to prepare for these games. You know, as an outside observer now, all I do is see what game day, just like everyone else. You know, we don't see, you know, after the game's on Saturday, we don't see Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We see none of the prep work. And as a former player, I can tell you that prep work is some of the hardest things you'll ever have to do in your life. You know, so it's easy for a fan to sit here and pick these kids apart, but you don't know how these kids prepare each week in and week out, each game. Having to go to class, having to go to practice, having to, you know, get to go to study table, having to do all the prep work leading to that game. So I would tell them to believe in themselves. You know, don't worry about what anyone else thinks about you. As long as you know and understand in your heart that you're giving your best, you're giving 100%, that's all that should matter. The simple fact is one day you will gel. You know, it wasn't last week, it may be this week. They may go out and win the next 3 games, but keep applying the effort and the heart and desire that you put in each practice into the games, you know, and just go out there and just do the best you can. No one's expecting you to move mountains. I wouldn't expect those kids to move mountains. They're in a tough situation. I've been 0-4 before the start of the season at Syracuse. You know what? But the one thing I always did, even after starting 0-4, I would tell these kids, is believe in yourself. You know, right now, a lot of these people, they want Doug fired, they want this player not playing, they want this one starting. That's all, you know, that's all neither here or there. All they can do is take care of the one person that's standing right in front of them, and that's themselves. You know, so just go out there and be the best possible athlete, be the best possible person you can believe. You know what I mean, be and just go out there and just do your best. That's all anyone can ever ask for those kids, to do their best. If you make a mistake, so be it. You're a human being. No one's perfect. You know, you make mistakes here and there. You know, you can't control the future. All you can do is control the present. So that's what I always say. Just go out there and just do the best job you possibly can for that day, and then, you know, it'll roll over.
Coach Marone, as you said, you know, some people wanting him fired. They say that a coach will never Well, they say that he takes too much when there's a loss, that they take too much on their shoulders, and that with a win, maybe they don't get enough.
Mm-hmm.
Doug Marrone, right now where he stands in this season, is he taking too much, in your opinion, on his shoulders for the state of the team? Or do you feel that it's fair that people are questioning where the team is heading?
You know, it's the dynamics of the athletes of the modern day is different than when I played. I mean, I look at Doug now, and I think he's taking a positive direction in turning his team around from the Robson eras. You know, the thing I think that's looming large over him, and I can't seem to shake it, can't seem to get out of my mind, is the simple fact that 2 years ago, you know, they went to a bowl game, and they beat Kansas State. And you look at Kansas State now, and you look at Syracuse now, and you say, what did they do differently than what we're doing? Because they're the number three team in the country, you know, and we're not even ranked and still, you know, basically cellar dwellers, you know, or middle of the pack. You know, so it goes without saying, you know, are we getting the athletes? Are we getting the coaching? Are we doing the right things to put our program at that top, upper echelon, that top tier? Right now, we're not doing it. But I think the attitude and the mentality of the teams and the players have changed. You know, you have players now who basically believe in the system and feed into a system, but we just don't have that enough athletes, you know, and enough pressing forward, you know, to win these games. You know, until we get that point, we'll be stuck in the same situation we are now.
When you look at a guy like Ryan Nassib and you look at a player like Alec Lemon, these are guys that could very well leave Syracuse, already having cases, but could leave with more records that now belong to them in the here and now. And you look at receivers like Kadri Ishmael that came here, and you look at Kevin Johnson's of the world, and then with Ryan Nassib, you look at Marvin Graves, Donovan McNabb. So when you see history of Syracuse football, and you see that right in the here and now you're watching history, do you feel bad for these players that it may come down to, in their entire career, it was the New Era Pinstripe Bowl, no BCS Bowl, no ranking, and really not a lot of respect record-wise in the Big East? When they're done here at the end of the season, do you have kind of that tear that hangs out for them in saying that, you know, this was top talent that just didn't have enough around them to get it going?
Of all the teams across the country that play football, you know, like I can name a million players that are in the same situation. It's like, you know, it is what it is. Records are meant to be broken. You know, as Nassib have broken some few records. You know, Lemon has broken a few records, but eventually their records will get broken also. You know, so but you know, you feel for players that don't really get a chance to play in a bowl game because, you know, it's a great experience. They got one, you know, they have one bowl game under their belt, but I'm pretty sure they would like they have to have more. But, you know, it wasn't meant to be for them. You know, but all they can do is, as I said before, that's in the past. You know, just go out there, you know, and today is what, Wednesday? Just treat Wednesday as if it's the last day because, you know, tomorrow's never promised, you know. So go out there and do the best, be the best person you possibly can today. When practice comes along, work as hard as you possibly can to prepare yourself for the game coming up on Saturday, you know. And that's it, you know. That's all they can do is just go out there and just be the best possible person they can be for today of Wednesday. Thursday will be another day if you're given a day. Friday will be another day if you're given that day. But tomorrow is never promised. And I tell even my own Pop Warner team, when I used to coach them, just work as hard as you can possibly today. And just learn as much as you can possibly today because it'll carry you towards tomorrow if you're given tomorrow because you're not guaranteed to wake up. So just do the best you can on this day, you know, and work towards the future.
Working toward the future, election happened. Mm-hmm. We know who's coming back for the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that it's only fair for us in the NFL to have our own election here, and I'm going to let you be the polls. You got the popular vote and the electoral vote. We both will share them, so we'll see who wins here. So either be a dead heat like Florida, or maybe there's going to be a landslide case here for the electoral votes. But we'll start with players who currently look to have given it up. And I'm going to say that if you had the choice to vote the president of the player that is doing the least amount of work after a big contract, would your president be Chris Johnson of Tennessee or Calvin Johnson of Detroit?
Chris Johnson of Tennessee, I'd say. You know, I think Calvin Johnson at some point still has that spark. He's not playing at the level he played last year, but, I mean, Chris Johnson is just completely tanked. He's done. I mean, he doesn't want to play football anymore, and it shows.
I would have to give it also to Chris Johnson for president in this case because Calvin Johnson, even though somehow, some way against Jacksonville, one of the worst secondaries, if not the worst secondary in the league, not this year, but most of the time in the last few seasons, to have 129 yards on just 7 catches, not have a touchdown, is beyond me. But I would have to give it to Chris Johnson because you can see it a lot easier than you could see Calvin. Calvin could say, oh, well, you know, Stafford couldn't find me. The line's not protecting. But in the case of Chris Johnson, there's so much talent. Once he gets the ball, I've seen in replays, as we've talked about, wide open holes that he's kind of hesitated and, oh, okay, I'll go through this one, but I'll stop here. I'm not going to break out for an 80-yard run. I don't want to put that on my body. He looks like he's given up. Calvin's numbers look like he's given up, but Chris's whole demeanor on the field and his effort definitely looks that way. And we'll go now to our next election here. So the first election won by Chris Johnson. The next one would be, of all time, who is the man that has given up the most after a big contract? And I'm going to ask you to choose between, once all is said and done, and I know it's hard to say right now, but the fastest player to give it up between these two, Sean Alexander, Jamal Anderson.
Sean Alexander, hands down, there's no even question ifs, ands, or buts about that, because there was someone who was, as a running back, what you would have thought would have challenged and shattered NFL numbers, that once he got that big contract, that huge contract, completely disappeared. He had won no more parts of football once he got that huge contract. It's Sean Alexander by landslide for me.
I would have to give it to Sean Alexander, too, because Jamal Anderson, even though he made it to the Super Bowl and disappeared after that, I mean, this is a man that held out for more money, got an injury, and he was out. You know, he tore his ACL. So you can understand that. But in Sean Alexander's case, it wasn't a torn ACL that took him out of the game. It was himself. Mm-hmm. You see a guy that used to get 10 yards. He's, you know, 5 yards a carry. He'll get a 10-yard gain, a 12-yard gain. He'll break open for a run. And then you see this guy getting 2 yards, 1 yard. Can't score on the goal line. So I would definitely, and his body type didn't change.
No, it did not.
So I would definitely have to give it to Sean Alexander and not put it on the Madden curse that some people like to call it. Next thing that I want to ask here is the player to you that at the end of it all, once you look back, had the best career coming out of Syracuse and going to the NFL. I'm going to put it between these two. Donovan McNabb for your president or Dwight Freeney?
Ooh, that's an interesting one. I'd have to go with Dwight Freeney for the simple fact of the Colts never really had a defense, you know, and they basically were a defense where they didn't have that great of a secondary, you know, with the exception of Bob Sanders back there, you know, never really like overall talented linebackers. And for Dwight Freeney to be the presence that he was on that defense, you know, in an offense-driven team, you know, was unbelievable. Not to take anything away from Donovan McNabb, because Donovan had a great career at Syracuse, you know, but Donovan was also surrounded by a lot of talent, whereas Dwight Freeney was not surrounded by a ton of talent on that defense, and yet he still was a standout, and yet he still wreaked havoc each and every game against his opponents in an offense-driven team.
I would have to say Dwight Freeney for the sole purpose of Donovan McNabb had a lot of talent, did a lot of great things in Philadelphia, made it to the Super Bowl, but Dwight Freeney has a lot of good talent, still in the game, brought the defense to the Colts, brought a pass rush to the Colts, and he has a ring. So I would have to give it to Dwight Freeney, edge him by that ring. Without that ring, I think it's a different conversation, but I would have to give it to him because of that ring. And now we'll take a little bit more of a relaxed approach here and say the best hair president, Troy Polamalu or Clay Matthews.
Ooh, I'd have to say Troy Polamalu, because right now he has more commercials, so he's more marketable right now. So I'd say Troy Polamalu, but you know, Clay Matthews is a very, very, very close second.
I would say Clay Matthews, because I think the funny part of Clay Matthews is from the back, if you just saw the head, you think it's a woman.
Yeah. That's scary.
it's a little bit scary, because he's got that dirty blonde hair, but I would give it up to Clay Matthews because of his new commercial where he has all the fat heads around the house, and he's talking about it as if it's not him. So I would give it to him. I like Polamalu's fro, but I think the fro's a little bit dated, so I'll give it to Clay Matthews with his, I guess you call it Rebecca Romaine hair.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Scary.
Kind of like that. Now I'm going to throw it to you, and I want you to come up with one. If you had two guys you want to put up against for me, I'll let you put me on the spot for a presidential election.
If I had to ask you one question, who do you think right now, current day, is the most underachieving, overpaid athlete playing in the NFL? And I'll give you two options to think from. Right now, one, I'd say, as we talked about earlier, Nnamdi Asamoah, who signed that huge contract with the Eagles, you know, 2 years ago, who's basically playing at a level of, you know, a sixth, seventh, you know, or eighth rounder. Or I'd also say what you say, Blaine Gabbert, the Jacksonville Jaguars, who's another one who's being paid, but, you know, is just playing to a level of prosperity. And not prosperity, you know, but to a level that most athletes don't play.
I would have to say in this case that it has to go, if you're looking at overrated and overpaid, or underrated and overpaid?
Overrated and overpaid.
Overrated and overpaid is definitely Nnamdi Asamoah. It has to be, because I don't think Gabbert is rated.
Yeah.
I think he's NA. I think he's one of those things when the movie comes out and it says this film has not yet been rated. That's kind of how I look at Blaine Gabbert. I think there's expectation in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's expectation across the country.
Okay.
With Nnamdi Asamoah, he's the best free agent out. You know, he's the best option out there. Once he gets a chance to go to a team, traded, free agency, whatever it may be, get him off of that team in Oakland, send him to a place where he belongs. And so, you know, I think when it came down to Philadelphia getting him, it was like they won the lottery. They got this great pick. They, you know, out of everyone they could have went out and got for their defense, they nab him, they bring him over, and the expectation is this guy's going to be lights out. And he's going to play with Asante Samuel, and, you know, they called it the dream team. Michael Vick said that, you know, as dumb as that was. And so I think that Nnamdi Asamoah makes the most sense to say that. Now, if you're telling me overpaid,
mm-hmm.
period,
yes.
Then Blaine Gabbert's definitely in there. Because, you know, the fact that he's making more than food stamps right now is upsetting, but... You know, I think you know, you definitely have to say Nnamdi Asamoah, and I'll throw it back to you, but I think I know your answer.
Oh, that's definitely Nnamdi Asamoah, without a doubt. And I was going to say one thing, but what do you think about Mario Williams for the Bills? Because that's what I first thought when I just said Gabbert, because of your Jacksonville affiliation.
Well, you know, if there's the independent candidate in this race, you know, and we put in Mario Williams, I would have to say, you know, he would, as an independent candidate, Mario Williams would beat out Blaine Gabbert, and he would cause us to go to a Florida vote at 3:00 in the morning, because I think the hanging Chad is definitely here for Mario Williams. So I think if you could take a guy who got booed on draft night because they didn't get Reggie Bush, you know, a guy that got booed on draft night, to being a team in Houston that makes the playoffs, to being a guy that shut up all these people at Reliant Stadium that didn't want him, and then go to the Bills and literally, I don't know what it is. I think it's a change in weather. I don't know, you know.
It's a big contract.
There's something about that.
He disappeared.
You know, Mario Williams, you know, you think Mario Williams goes to any team and they got this huge grab. But the Bills, put it this way, when a player goes to the Bills, besides Ryan Fitzpatrick his first year.
Bermuda Triangle.
You know? Yeah, it is. When they go to the Bills, it's the Bermuda Triangle. When you go to the Patriots,
yeah.
It's like going to the Holy Grail.
Correct.
You know, they drink that water, something happens. You know, Wes Welker in Miami was nothing.
Yeah.
So it's funny how that is. So, you know, I find it crazy. Now, I'm going to throw one at you. And, you know, this is one that is hard, knowing that I've covered Jacksonville for the past four seasons, but I'm gonna put this at you. If we had two candidates for the number one pick right now, who wins it? The Jacksonville Jaguars or the Cleveland Browns?
Ooh, still 8 games left in the season, but I'd have to go with Jacksonville right now. At least Cleveland have glimpses of being a talented team and getting better, whereas Jacksonville is just like, I throw a few pretty good high school teams around here. They could probably give them a good run for their money.
Yeah, I think my alma mater, CBA, would probably take it to Jacksonville a little bit. I think your Pop Warner team might take it to Jacksonville a little bit.
Possibly. Jacksonville, they're just shutting it down. They're not even playing football. I don't know what it is they're doing.
Yeah, so I think if Jacksonville right now put a court in the middle and started playing basketball, people wouldn't see any difference.
No difference at all.
You know, so I think you definitely have to give it to Jacksonville. The first time that they begin getting a number one pick, so, you know, all the power to them in that respect. Well, first time in a long time that they'll be put in a situation to be in that top three picks, because they're usually in the top 10, but I could definitely see number one right now. And as a running back, I want to hit you with this one. This one's hard. I'm going to give you three.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you your three-party candidates. So, best running back of all time in the NFL. You have three choices. Barry Sanders, Emmitt Smith, Jim Brown.
Barry Sanders, no, I mean, hands down, is not even a discussion of the question. Yes, Jim Brown was a great running back for his time. You know, he dominated the game. You know, he's a physical runner. You know, Emmitt Smith, the same way Emmitt Smith ran, had a great line, a great tight end, a great fullback to block for him. Whereas Barry Sanders, with the team he had in Detroit, with no blocking, to do the things he did was magical to watch. And it was Barry Sanders, definitely.
I would have to agree with you in this case. You know, I obviously wasn't around for Jim Brown time. You know, you can look back at film and see what he's done. I was around for Emmitt Smith and did watch him very, very closely. Have a lot of respect for Moose Johnston. You know, Jay, I've said it for a long time, Jay Novacek, the blocking tight end, the day that he left was the day of the demise of the Cowboys. Everybody started going after that when he retired. So, you know, I would have to say that Emmitt would edge Brown to me. But Barry Sanders, like you said, on Thanksgiving, you knew this team could be 0-6, 6-0, 3-3. It didn't matter where this team was standing once it came Thanksgiving time. And I know my numbers aren't, you know, exact, but you get what I mean, is that this team could be undefeated, completely defeated, somewhere in the middle, and he always figured out a way to run. And the beauty of Barry Sanders that I will never forget, and it breaks my heart to this day that he didn't play a couple more seasons, is that he could hit a pile, and you turn away from the TV, and you think, that play's done. And he would somehow come out of the pile, fake the safety, and run 80 yards, and you could never, for the life of you, understand it. The only thing that fought Barry Sanders hard was the whistle. Yeah. When he hit the pile, were they going to blow the whistle? Yeah. That's all it is, but you never did. If you're a ref, you hold on to that whistle, you swallow that whistle, and you let him do what he does. And I've never seen a man make the moves that Barry Sanders made. I know Walter Payton, you know, sweetness of what he did. But when you look at a guy like Barry Sanders, I mean, I, to this day, get chills when I think about that player. So we give Barry Sanders that presidential win. We give him that nod. And so for here on Back on the Field with Robert Drummond, I'm Dan Satora, and we'll be with you next week. And we might have another interesting take on a few things. But you saw Election Day. Maybe the guy you wanted won. Maybe he didn't. But hopefully we got some of your winners out here today. I appreciate it as always.
All right, thanks.